Beginning a new parsha, Parsha's Bahar, Bahar Sinai. Yeshua Kav Dalet Mitzvos. There are 24 mitzvos in Parsha's Bahar. Zion Mitzvos Asei. The Yud Zion Mitzvos Lo Asei. There are 7 positive commandments and 17 negative commandments. Mitzvah Shin Chavav 326. Shelo Na'avod Ha'adama Bashana Hashvias. That we should not work the ground in the 7th year. Shelo Na'avod Ha'adama Bashana Hashvias. Shehi Nikrei Shnas Hashmita. That's called the sabbatical year. Every 7th year we have a sabbatical year. Shenemar Uvashana Hashvi'is Sadcha Lo Sizra. On the 7th year, you shall not plant your fields. Shorish Mitzvazo, Fratev Chalinia, Kosov, Kesef, Talve, Asidal. Remember that in the Sefer Chinuch's account, he split Parshas Mishpatim into 2 Parshas. So he had the first half of Parshas Mishpatim was called Parshas Mishpatim. The second part, half of Parshas, what we have called Parshas Mishpatim, he called Im Kesef, because the Im Kesef Talves Ami, which is interesting because Im Kesef. If you will lend my people money so you can't charge interest, etc. That's where he quoted the original discussion of Parshas of the Shemitah year. So that was in Parshas Mishpatim, or the second half we call Parshas Im Kesef. Look, as you receive lashes, if you work the ground in any manner that is prohibited midah raisa, if you do it in the time that the Beis HaMikdash stands. So what's the problem with this? The problem is, what?
It still applies, right?
So the Shemitah is not connected to the Beis HaMikdash per se. It has nothing to do with whether the Beis HaMikdash is standing or not standing. But the Sefer Chinuch is trying to express the idea that Lemaisa, the only time that Shemitah was the Oraisa, was a very long time ago, was during the time of Bayis Rishon. Since the destruction of the first temple, Shemitah has not been Deoraisa. Why? Because on a Deoraisa level, Shemitah is connected to Yovel, the Jubilee year, which we'll discuss in a few mitzvahs from now. And the Jubilee year is only applicable because it says in the Torah, Ukrasem Dror La'aretz L'chol Yosheveha, you shall proclaim liberty throughout the land to all the inhabitants thereof. Like it says on the Liberty Bell, right? So all the inhabitants thereof, that all the inhabitants of the land have to become free and have to be relevant to the observance of the Jubilee year. So that was only the case. The only time where all the Jewish people lived in Eretz Yisrael, which is how it's really supposed to be, the Jewish people live in Eretz Yisrael, was in the time of the First Temple. After the destruction of the First Temple and the... or perhaps even before, when the first of the tribes were exiled by the Assyrians, the northern tribes. Not even talking about Yehuda. So then the Yovel no longer was observed, and therefore Shemitah was no longer Deraisa. So what's the status of Shemitah nowadays? So even though, again, so we're talking about Trumas Umaisras, when you're talking about the tithes, so that is dependent, seemingly not just that everyone has to be living there, but even when most of the Jewish people live there. So then Truma Sumaisris would be applicable midaraisa, according to those who hold that that's a requirement for the deraisa status of Truma Sumaisris. So for Yovel and Shemitah, we require even a higher standard. So there's a machlokas in the Gemara, and a machlokas we show them how to paskin exactly regarding the status of Shemitah nowadays. So one opinion says, a minority opinion, says that it's still deraisa. They don't hold to this connection that Shemitah nowadays is still deraisa. The majority opinion is that Shemitah nowadays, when there's no Yovel, is only applicable midrabanan. So that's the majority opinion. That's the way the Shulchan Aruch rules. That's how we hold in terms of our halachic practice, that Shemitah nowadays is derabanan.
How does it change the practice?
When you have a doubt, for example, as though there's a certain halacha applies on the Shemitah year, so if it's a derabanan rule, so then you have a right to rule leniently, but for a deraisa, you have to rule stringently. And there is a even more minority opinion that holds that Shemitah nowadays is not noheg at all. Or perhaps observing it is only a midas chasidus, a pious practice to observe Shemitah, but it's not absolutely required nowadays. But that's, again, that's an extremely minority opinion. The accepted halachic ruling is the Shemitah nowadays is the Rabbanan. But you have some people who want to latch on to this shita that Shemitah nowadays is not technically applicable at all, as a sniff to what's called the Heter Mechira. So we know that in the times when the original, not the original, but the Jewish community in Eretz Israel was growing in the last 150 years or so, so there was a serious issue because there wasn't such an agricultural infrastructure. The farmers were struggling as it was, and there was a fear that the entire Jewish settlement in Eretz Israel would collapse if Shemitah were observed according to the halacha. So many of the rabbis said, okay, nothing doing. You have to, you're not allowed to violate halacha. You can't have these cheshbonos in order to violate halacha. The halacha is the halacha, so deal with it. You have to deal with the consequences, whatever it is. So some rabbis authorized the use of what's called heter mechira, which is essentially that the farmers would sell their farms to non-Jews, and then they would be not have any Shemitah problems, and they would be able to work the land normally, and the fruit that was produced in the lands of the non-Jews would not be subject to Kedushas Shviyas. So obviously, that the holiness of Shviyas, meaning that the fruit has to be eaten as opposed to sold and other things, and or to waste, whatever. So besides the problems that you could, the instinctual problems with this, this involves a certain very questionable assumption. So first of all, it's not so clear at all that a non-Jewish owned field in Eretz Yisrael is exempt from Shemitah restrictions, according to many Shitas, even if the non-Jew would own it, so it would still be subject to Shemitah restrictions. Mm-hmm. The minhag in Eretz Yisrael for many years, since the 16th century or so, was to follow the opinion that if a fruit grew in a non-Jewish owned land, so it was not subject to Kedusha Shvius. It was not, you could do whatever you wanted, but it was not subject to Kedusha Shvius, even though this was a matter of debate. This followed the opinion of the Beis Yosef. The Beis Yosef held that fruit that grew in a non-Jewish owned land was not subject to Kedusha Shvius. However, this many poskim, such as in our day, the Chazon Ish, felt this was completely wrong, and he felt that one had to observe the holiness of Shvius even with fruit that grew in non-Jewish lands. So you have this nowadays in Eretz Yisrael as well. You have different minhagim within the frum community as to whether they rely on what's called nochri. That's what they call it. It's just the colloquial term for fruit that grew in the Shemitah year in a field that was for sure owned by a Gentile, nothing to do with the Heter Mechira, is called Nochri. So some people still treat it in the holiness of Shvius, and some people do not treat it with the holiness of Shvius. So that's number one. So even if that's the case, that it doesn't have Kedusha Shvius, so whether a Jew is allowed to work the land is another very questionable assumption if it's owned by a non-Jew. And the other questionable assumption is that one is allowed to sell the land of parts of Eretz Yisrael to a non-Jew, which is really usur. That some people thought incorrectly, probably, that it only applies to a non-Jew who's Oved Avodah Zarah. So a Muslim is not Oved Avodah Zarah, he's not an idol worshiper, so therefore there's no problem of selling parts of Eretz Yisrael, but that's also...
Will he sell it back to you?
He wants to keep it.
Why would I let go of it?
He wants to keep it. So
no way.
You can't have it both ways. You made a face when I said some rabbis said you have to deal with the consequences of Shemitah no matter what come, and now you don't want to sell the land to non-Jews.
That's a consequence. I'll live with
That's true. That Rav Kook, no rabbi says, yay, Heter Mechira is the most wonderful thing to happen to the Jewish people ever. Everybody agrees that if you can get by without it, you should get by without it.
Yeah.
Question is that when an emergency situation, whether it's an acceptable device or not. So that's another thing. So really, it's not permissible to sell the land of Israel to non-Jews, even ones who would not worship Avodah Zarah. Second, another reason is that the poskim said is that land sales have to be recorded in the official real estate registry called the Tabu. At that time, that's what it was called. And it has to be recorded in the real estate registry. So if not recorded in the real estate registry, then it's not a real sale, and the land doesn't work. That's it. Okay.
Bad faith.
then the other thing that was suggested by the Chazon Ish is that even if you can get over all these other problems, which obviously he didn't go with, but he said the sale is not does not have any legal status for a simple reason, that the farmers do not sell their fields to the non-Jews directly. They do it through the Rabbanut, just like people sell their chametz to the rabbi. Most people don't sell their chametz directly to the non-Jew, even though if you have a non-Jewish neighbor and you give him a box of chametz and you say, here's my chametz, give me a quarter for it, and, you know, after Pesach we can
negotiate
again. You know what the story is. I'll probably buy it back. But in the meantime, you know, feel free to enjoy. And if it's understood that it's a real sale, then that would be better than selling it through the rabbi, certainly. Most people don't have the capacity to do that, so they sell it to the rabbi. Okay. But he says that there's a principle in halacha called Ein Shliach L'Dvar Avera. You can't make a messenger to do something, to do a sin for you. So since the rabbinate is selling it on behalf of the farmer, and they're basically doing a sin because you're not allowed to sell the land to a non-Jew, so therefore the sale is invalid because Ein Shliach L'Dvar Avera, because they cannot serve as your messenger in order to do a sin. So again, obviously the proponents of Hetar Mechira have various defenses for these things, but it's questionable, even if you accept all these things, you know, obviously it's a very big kula. Again, it's ameliorated, as Chacham Avadia says, by the fact that Shemitah nowadays is only the Rabbanan, according to the vast majority of poskim. But nevertheless, the Rabbanan is also important, and these devices to use Hetar Mechira are so questionable that there's a big movement, certainly nowadays, and has been for a while, to try to encourage farmers to observe Shemitah properly. And the question also is, nowadays, is there a Shaset Chak? In theory, is it an emergency situation nowadays? You know, you could import fruit more. You know, again, it might not be as much available, but it's certainly not an emergency situation the way it was 150 years ago. So that's why Rav Yoshev said. So Rav Yoshev was a student of many people who permitted the Hetar Mechira 150 years ago, Rav Kook and others. But he was famously extremely against these. Nowadays, besides the fact that I didn't hold of it anyway, okay, he didn't agree with the whole thing, but he said that nowadays there's no emergency situation, so if you asked every single rabbi 150 years ago if you should employ this device now, they would tell you no. It just become entrenched, you know, as something that's done every year by the Rabbanut, and it's not really proper to do it, even for those people who would have allowed it a long time ago. So you have in Israel, they say no, it's still an emergency situation, because if you don't rely on the Hetar Mechira, then you're going to support Arab farmers instead of the Jewish farmers. Okay, that's maybe if the halacha says you're not allowed to do it, so then that's going to be an unfortunate consequence of what's going on over here. So there are two sides to the story, but they accepted Psak certainly in America, again in Israel, whatever. There are from people who rely on it, not the Haredi people, shall we say, but there are the Tilumi people who still rely on it, but. In America, the accepted psak of all the major kashrus organizations, based on Rav Soloveitchik and others, who said that in America, it's certainly not a shasat chak, it's not an emergency situation, so we should not rely on produce that was produced by Hetar Mechira in Eretz Yisrael, because we don't have a need for it. Everybody agrees it's a very questionable device. So the American kashrus organizations will not give a hechsher to any fruit that was produced via the Hetar Mechira.
So then who can they sell it to?
Within Eretz Yisrael.
Okay.
Or export it.
If you hold to the Hetar Mechira, so then it doesn't have Kedusha Shvius, and then, I mean, the question is...
Sell in the grocery store.
No, so first of all, as we're going to discuss in a couple mitzvahs from now, the Sefer Chinuch brings up the idea that what happens if you violated Shemitah? Let's say you protected your produce, you put a fence around your field, even though you're not supposed to do that, you're supposed to let anybody who wants come and take the fruit from Shemitah. So let's say you did, you violated Shemitah and you protected it. So does that fruit become prohibited or not? Are you not... To anyone, you're not allowed to eat it, because if the owner did an Avera, They didn't treat this fruit as properly as Shemitah fruit properly should be treated. So does it become prohibited to eat?
By whom? By
the anyone. Oh. It becomes us or treif. So most opinions.
Treif only applies to Jews.
So, right, okay.
How about Goyim? How about Arabs?
Oh, they'd be allowed to eat it, yes, okay, but that doesn't really help us. So, according to the majority of opinions, that's actually mutter. That does not affect the halachic status of the fruit, but the minhag is lechatchila to be machmir to try to not use such fruits. So the question is, since according to the majority of opinions, even if you treated the land normally, and nevad is another issue, that if you actually worked the land during Shemitah, so many Shemitahs hold that that's prohibited midrabanan to eat the fruits because of a penalty for sinning. So, since, at least on a deraisa level, and maybe even on a derabana level, at least the shamor, if it's protected, even if it's not nevad, again, different shittas about both. But the question is, if there's a fruit that was grown with a heter mechira, so is that fruit prohibited to be eaten? That's another questionable assumption, that if somebody brings you fruit, even if you hold a heter mechira is no good, so it doesn't necessarily prohibit the fruit from being consumed.
You go back just a minute about the guy who puts a fence around when he shouldn't have. If from Jew is if he scales the fence and gets in and eats some stuff anyway, is that stealing or is it okay for him to eat or what? Because the guy.
Oh, it's okay. Yeah.
It's okay because the fence shouldn't be there.
There is a bit of a discussion about that.
It's not good for you to shovel.
It's right. It's not. There's a bit of a discussion about that as to whether it's a mitzvah on the owner to declare everything hefker. But if he doesn't, then it still remains his. Or it's called Afkata de Malka, that the God declared everything free and permissible, so therefore what you do has no relevance. So I believe the accepted opinion is Afkata de Malka, so that if somebody does put a fence around their field in Shemitah, then you are allowed to scale the fence and take the fruit anyway. But it doesn't mean that the fruit would still be called Shomor, would still be called protected, because the person is clearly trying to protect their fruits.
Okay, the guy who scales the fence, he's allowed to take it and eat it. Can he take it and sell the leftovers or not?
You can't sell perishables at all.
You can't sell it, okay. So forget it. You can take what you need to eat.
Right, you're not allowed to... Okay. Perishables are only for eating. Okay. Only for eating. Okay.
Well, that's there's this whole system with getting it all together and selling it through the Beis Din or something.
Right, there is something called Otzer Beis Din, which has roots in the Tosefta and very early sources, which is that the city rabbinical court organizes the distribution of the produce so that it shouldn't just be totally hefkerdik, but that's the way it's done nowadays is also, it's not so pashut. Because technically, when you have an Otzer Beis Din, so when you're paying for the fruits, so you're not supposed to be paying for the fruit, you're supposed to be paying only for the labor that it's done. So if that's the case, then, for example, again, besides the slightly more labor, I guess, it takes to produce such a thing, so wine made from grapes, that would ordinarily be a $10 wine, and wine made from better quality grapes that would ordinarily be a $50 wine should technically be sold at the same price, because we're only talking about the labor. Okay, maybe there's an extra fermentation, they're using more expensive oak barrels or something to age the wine. So that cost could be factored in a little bit, but it shouldn't be the normal discrepancy in price just based on the quality and the grapes. It's only based on labor. But the way Otzer Beis Din is done nowadays by many people is a little bit questionable because of that reason. But again, it is possible to organize a system where everybody is doing the Otzer Beis Din properly, and that's no problem at all. That should really be fine. And you eat the Perish Shvias, but that certainly has Kiddush Shvias, so that doesn't, part of the appeal of the Heter Mechira is that in their minds, so it doesn't, the fruit no longer has Kiddush Shvias, so you're much freer about what you're supposed to do with it. So that Otzer Beis Din does not have that. But everybody agrees Otzer Beis Din is the best, that if you have a choice between Heter Mechira and Otzer Beis Din, so you take the Otzer Beis Din. Even the rabbis who say that you should do Heter Mechira better than buying the non-Jewish produce, because supporting the Arab farmers, agree that if you have that you should take Otzer Beis Din, where Shemitah was observed properly, as opposed to the Heter Mechira. So you understand why. So Chacham Ovadia had a line where he said, you know, I don't understand if you're allowed to do Mechiras Chametz on Pesach, so why you shouldn't be allowed to do Heter Mechira. The truth is, he has a point in the sense that owning Chametz is the Raisa on Pesach, but and the Shemitah nowadays is only the Rabbanan, but on the other hand, as you see before, the institution of Heter Mechira involves a lot more questionable assumptions than does Mechiras Chametz. In Mechiras Chametz, everybody agrees you're allowed to sell your Chametz to a non-Jew. There's no prohibition involved in that at all. The question is only what type of kinyanim work. How does it work? And yeah, so you perform a lot of different kinyanim, so you assume that at least one of them is going to be successful in transferring ownership of the chametz to the non-Jew. I mean, the only thing that's 100% glatt kosher in terms of Mechiras Chametz and acquiring ownership by a non-Jew is if he literally brings it into his house and acquires ownership. But since you want it to remain in your house, the Chametz, the non-Jew is not necessarily interested, even if you would want to, in opening a warehouse for Pesach and collecting all the Chametz. Mm. So you want to do a kinyan the same way it works between two Jews. That between two Jews, so you have different types of kinyanim that work for different things, like... you know, when you have chalipin, where you acquire a vessel of the other person in the transaction, like you pick up a pen, you know, whatever. So that works for some things. And if you pay money, so that works midaraisa. And if you, so there are different things that different types of methods of acquisition that work between two Jews. So it's unclear exactly how it will work between a Jew and a non-Jew. So we try them all, and we hope that something works. So, the assumptions involved in Mechiras Chametz are somewhat less questionable than are involved in the Heter Mechira, even though you're potentially dealing with the Daraisa by Mechiras Chametz. Unless you go with the Mahalach, the famous Mahalach of the Bechor Shor. The Bechor Shor, one of the Achronim from the 18th century, I believe, 17th century, somewhere in that range, writes that Mechiras Chametz only works because you perform the bittul. So we know that on a deraisa level, you don't need to get rid of the chametz from your house at all, technically. You just have to do what's called bittul chametz. You say, I'm meditating, and I'm changing my mental attitude towards my chametz. I no longer consider it to be a chametz, no longer consider it to be food. I consider it to be the dust of the earth. So, and that's true. So on a deraisa level, you're allowed to leave a challah in your freezer, and you have bittul belev shalem. You truly believe it's dust. If somebody comes along during Pesach and takes your challah that you worked very hard to bake and stomps on it and flushes it down the toilet and feeds it to the birds, you don't care at all. You've totally mentally parted from this challah. So if that's the case... So we know that the Rabbanan, that's not acceptable, because we're worried that either you'll come to eat it or that the bittul will not be with your total heart, that you actually have to destroy your chametz. You have to search, you have to go on a search and destroy mission to destroy your chametz. So we know that on a Rabbanan level, that's not acceptable. So according to the Bechor Shor, the Mechiras chametz also is sort of a ha'arama. It's like it's a trick. You know, it's not necessarily really a good sale, but since the prohibition of chametz after the bittul is only the Rabbanan, so the harama works to alleviate a prohibition mid the Rabbanan. So you have a challah in your freezer. On the morning before Pesach, you declare, all the chametz that's in my possession is absolutely nullified, it's absolutely ownerless, I have no interest in it whatsoever. On a deraisa level... That's it. You fulfilled your mitzvah of getting rid of your chametz. You don't. It's as if you don't own that chametz over Pesach.
Why are you keeping it in your
So on a derabbanan level, you have to physically get rid of it. So the Bechor Shor says that you're right. If you still owned that chametz on a deraisa level, if you did not say the bittul, the nullification, then the mechiras chametz that you do through the rabbi would not work, because it's only a trick. It's not really. It's not considered. It's not a real sale, whatever that means. So since the prohibition, he says, is only the Rabbanan of owning this, of not owning, but having this chametz in your house on Pesach, so the Mechiras chametz works in order to alleviate the rabbinic prohibition. Another, a trick. How do you say harama in English?
Is it like a legal fiction?
Something like that. Like a legal fiction A legal fiction only works to alleviate a rabbinic prohibition. It does not work to alleviate a biblical prohibition. So that's one approach in the acronym to why the Mechiras Chametz works. However, most authorities don't agree with that. They say the Mechiras Chametz really works. It's a legal fact. It's not a legal fiction. The Chassam Sofer famously said, says, what do you mean? What do you mean it's aroma? It's a legal fiction. The non-Jew will come in the middle of Pesach and say, I want my chametz. You say, what do you mean you want your chametz? This is only a legal fiction. What are you talking about? The non-Jew said, what do you mean? We performed the kinyanim.
Right.
We did the legal things that work in your Jewish law. I want my chametz. I'm taking you to Beis Din. I'm taking you to the Jewish court. So you go to the Jewish court, and the Jewish court would paskin, give him his chametz. So that's, he really owns it in the eyes of halacha. So the guy could be screaming day and night, no, I only meant the legal fiction, not a legal fact. I wanted a fiction. What is this? The rabbi, I went to the rabbi. Obviously it's a fiction. The Beis Din would say, nothing doing, nothing luck. Give him his chametz. So if that's the case,
we shouldn't do legal fiction.
If that's the case, then the assumption is that the Mechiras Chametz really works. However, nevertheless, there are reasons to be machmir on it. That the Bahag, the Ritva, I believe quoting the Bahag, says that it's based on the Tosefta, that the Tosefta says that if you're coming in a ship on Pesach, right before Pesach, and you know there's not so much food around, and you don't want to throw it overboard, so what should you do with chametz that you happen to be owning? So you get either sell or give as a present to a non-Jew, you give him the chametz, and then you can take it back after Pesach. You buy it back. So as long as it's an absolute sale, there's no question about it. So then that works. But the Ritva says that nevertheless, if you do this every year, then your chametz is going to be aser as chametz shavra Pesach, because since you do it every year, it's too fishy. So you can't do it every year. So we don't accept that Ritva. But again, because of these various reasons, that since according to some opinions, it's there are certain problems with the Mechiras Chametz. So then that's why many people have the practice not to sell Chametz Gomor, that things that are absolutely Chametz.
What exactly is the boundary line between one and the other?
So there are certain things that there's only Chashash. Like,
if you have, vinegar.
Right, so some people sell vinegar, because in the United States, most vinegar is, the vast majority of vinegar is made of corn, it's not made of wheat, so therefore vinegar is only kidneys and not chametz, and you don't need to sell it. But nevertheless, because maybe there's a chance that it might be made from wheat, so then some people are makbit to sell products containing vinegar, even though they don't go so far as to actually get rid of it before Pesach, because on a deraisa level, you'd be allowed to own that during Pesach, because you go by the majority. You can have a right to assume that the vinegar.
Absolutely required to be sold.
Whiskey.
I mean, I understand.
Whiskey is also, some people have the minhag to sell whiskey even if they don't sell bread and pasta and things like that, because whiskey is distilled, and some people say that alleviates the d'oraisa status of the chametz. Okay. But most people assume that whiskey is chametz gamor, so people have the minhag not to sell.
But corn liquor, that's kineos.
Right, corn liquor is okay. You wouldn't need to sell that at all. If you know for sure that your liquor is only made of corn and there's no wheat in it at all, then you wouldn't need to get rid of that in all of Pesach. So that's a little bit funny, that idea that you sell your vinegar and you say, here, you sell the vinegar. And if it's chametz, I guess you could say in the sale, I want to sell the vinegar anyway to the non-Jew. Because if you just say, I'm selling all my chametz, including this these products containing vinegar, then what? So if the non-Jew wants to buy his, he wants to take his mayonnaise that he now owns, that contains vinegar. So then you say, well, prove to me that it's wheat vinegar, and then you take it. Wait a minute, you can't take
it. Sold it. I mean, come on.
No, then you have to say unconditionally you're just selling all those products, but then you get into problems.
What?
I don't know. So
he's trying to outsmart.
Trying to outsmart the system. So some people feel that just like the Heter Mechira, even though the Mechiras Chametz is much older than the Heter Mechira, but the Mechiras Chametz was designed for emergency situations. When the Jews were going into the liquor business, etc., then they didn't want to get rid of their entire...
Well, that's
stocks on Pesach. So they employed this Mechiras Chametz, where they got to keep the, basically in their warehouse, they got to keep the liquor, but that was technically owned by a non-Jew. But they feel that nowadays, what, to save 3 boxes of pasta, so you're gonna employ this Mechiras Chametz, why? That's why some people feel that private individuals nowadays, it's give it to a food bank. It's better not to employ the Mechiras Chametz at all. There is a thing, Rav Bilsky was famous for saying that, he said, nowadays people think that Chazal instituted 3 ways of getting rid of your Chametz. Bedika, searching for the Chametz. Bittel, the nullification in your mindset of the Chametz, and selling to a non-Jew. He says that's not true. The Mechiras Chametz is a new thing. People, you don't have to perform Mechiras Chametz. If you have Chametz in your house, so you perform Mechiras Chametz. But if you don't have Chametz in your house, you don't have to do Mechiras Chametz at all. So he said that for many years, he Beshita did not do Mechiras Chametz at all. Didn't sell to a non-Jew, because some people have the idea that even if they don't keep any Chametz, you know, just in case, as a backup, you know, just in case something remains, you should still do Mechiras Chametz. But he said he wanted to drive home the point that, you know, it's not a requirement. It's that people think it's an institution, a halachic institution, that you have to make Mechiras Chametz, which is not the case. Others feel that since it's become accepted, so it is best to do Mechiras Chametz as a backup, even if you don't keep any Chametz in your house, yeah?
But you have to know which, you have to be pretty clear in your mind about which stuff is the Chametz, I mean, the vinegar, the stuff that's pretty remote. You have to keep in your mind which it is and put it in a box and put it away or something, right?
Yeah, what do you mean? Yeah, sure.
No, I mean, oh, well, just in case, I'll do that.
What do you mean? You have to wait for a Pesach anyway.
Yeah.
Even if it's owned by the non-Jew, you can't have it in your kitchen
exactly,
sitting, yeah?
Exactly. Listen, it's not that. I have a friend on the West Side who, by all accounts, any account, is modern Orthodox. But she doesn't sell it. She gets rid of it. She just doesn't sell it. That's it.
But she throws it all out.
No, if it's boxes of pasta, I guess she gives it to a non-Jewish food bank or something.
If you plan ahead, you don't have
she
to
plans
end
ahead.
Up with
mm-hmm.
very much.
She plans ahead.
I know.
It's if a half a loaf of bread, she'll throw it out. Or a couple of boxes of pasta, she gives it to a non-Jewish.
Right, so it requires a little bit of planning. If you're the type where...
If I'm not mistaken, maybe the Shingo is hey, but if I'm not mistaken, this is what she learned from Rabbi Saul Berman when she was getting into this.
I don't think there's an issue of modern not freedom.
What? I'm just backing up. What he's saying is that because he's saying that people think this is there from the beginning of time,
right.
It's not.
Wait a minute. No, if the rabbi, if you go to any rabbi, Saul Berman or otherwise, you go to any rabbi and you say, hey, rabbi, I'm trying to choose between two things. Either I'm going to try to get rid of all my chametz before Pesach, or I'm going to keep all the pasta and bread in my freezer and not make any efforts to get rid of it at all, and I'm just going to sell it, which is better. So obviously, the rabbi is going to say get rid of it. There's nothing, nothing to discuss over there.
Now, you have said, though, that these days in America, mayonnaise and ketchup and all that stuff, that you can assume that...
Make your adin. It doesn't need to be sold at all because you go according to the majority.
It's kidney acid.
Right. So you should anyway. You say make your adin. Should you or shouldn't you?
If you're going to sell chametz anyway...
You have no pasta, you have no bread, you have none of that, you know, that's obviously chametz. So should you sell...
Rabben Zion Abba Shaul says in one of his Shuvos that if you do not have any chametz in your house, then it's better not to perform Mechiras Chametz because you want the bittul to be Belev Shalim. You want the nullification, so you're really afraid there might be some chametz that you didn't find still in your dwelling.
You make it anyway when you after the bedika. You say that it's all
right, but Rabben Zion's concern is that if you know that any chametz that's left is going to go to a non-Jew anyway, is going to be technically owned by a non-Jew. That you're not going to say the bittul b'leiv shalim. You're not going to be wholehearted in your bittul because. And then if the mechira doesn't really work, if you go like the chumras that the mechira that the sale of chametz doesn't really work, then you're really stuck because your bittul wasn't good and your mechira wasn't good. So that's why he recommends that if you really don't keep any chametz in your house at all, then it's better not to perform mechiras chametz. But the general practice is that most people do it anyway. But again, if I respect the approach of no mechiras chametz if you don't have any chametz in your house, and then I would say it's better to rely on the ikar adin, and you just keep the mayonnaise and the ketchup, and yeah, even without the selling at all.
So you put them aside.
You have to, yes, 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 sure.
Aside, like, wait, you can't take it out of the fridge.
So you put it in a bag.
In a bag.
You put it in a bag and you take it out of the bag.
It's better not to do mechira, even if all you have is let's say, liquor and vinegar.
Well, liquor, no. If you keep anything, look, the different approaches. There are some people who don't rely on mechiras chametz for absolute outright chametz, but they do rely on it for things that are questionable. Because they say, well, if it's a for sure not, so then I don't want to rely on it. But if it's a questionable, so I'm not gonna get rid of it. So I'm gonna keep it. I'm gonna do mechiras chametz. So if you keep anything, even if you get rid of all your bread and pasta, if there are certain things that are questionable, then you still have to do mechiras chametz.
Like liquor,
right. Like liquor. But if you get rid of everything you know of that is even a question of containing chametz, then you don't have to do mechiras chametz at all. Yeah. Yep. Some people are gluten-free, so they never have any chametz gomer in there, except maybe oats, which is questionable, fine, but...
Or low carb. I mean, we have almost nothing these days.
So. Right. So then, yeah. Look, in general, I'm in favor of no tricks, just pashit, observe the halacha. No tricks l'chumra, no tricks l'kula. You don't have to come up with crazy chumras, you don't have to come up with crazy kulas, but if there's something, there's a reasonable kula or a reasonable chumra, you don't have to reject it just because it's not, normative. There's a reasonable, Again, if we're not talking about something that's like really accepted psak, but just because something that some people do, is not doesn't necessarily give it the status of accepted psak. So I certainly respect the idea of not performing mechiras chametz, and you just do pashut what it says in the Torah and the Gemara that you get rid of it or you destroy it, you eat it, whatever you want to do before Pesach, and it just requires a little bit of planning. There are people who have freezers full of things that they don't plan. They just bake tons of stuff and they don't think about it, and then comes Pesach, so...
Yeah, then the shul makes a sit-down dinner and you're left with all that food.
So there are people to give it to. There are people to give it to. Okay. Mitzvah Shin Chav Zayin 327 Shelo Navod Avoda Gam Vailanos, that we shouldn't work the ground even... for trees. Shelo nasa avoda gam boilanos v'shana shviyas. On the seventh year, we should not work the trees. Shenemar v'char mechalos sizmor. You should not prune your vineyards. Loshon sifra hazera v'hazamir. Planting and pruning perush lo sizra v'lo sizmor. You shouldn't plant and you shouldn't prune. Bichlal hayu. What do you mean? It says in the originally that you shouldn't do any work on the land. Kelomar bichlal shvisa hayu. It says the land should rest. So why does it tell you those things explicitly? Shikvar Amar Vishav Sahaaretz. It already says the land should rest. V'chein Shnas Shabbosun Yel Aretz. It told you many times the land should rest. So maybe you should think you shouldn't do anything in the ground. So why does it tell you these two things? That should be obvious. V'lam Yatzu Lahaki Shaleya Mazera V'Zamir Miuchadin Shnevod Avaretz Uva'ilan Kedi Sahasam. So those things are planting and pruning are working the planting of the fields and pruning the trees. Those are, so it only applies to things that are acts of work that you do in the land that apply in the land and the trees. So what does that mean? So midaraisa, the only things that are prohibited are really planting and pruning. But the other things like fertilizing the land, for example, are only prohibited midarabanan. Okay? Inyan mitzvah zo ki mitzvah kudemes. This is like the previous mitzvah. Ksas prateh gazav di gamkin with parasha zim kesef talva. I talked about this in parasha mishpatim. Shiren and misham. Fine. Mitzvah shin chavches 328. Shol nixar svichim bashana shvias. We shall not harvest the aftergrowth. What's the aftergrowth? Sviach. We shouldn't harvest the aftergrowth. Shelo nixar mashat atzmiach aretz mi'atzma bashana shvias. That even if we didn't plant it, we're not allowed to harvest things that grew of their own accord during the Shemitah year. So, for example, seeds that fell from the previous harvest, the last year, and they didn't grow until now, so we're still not allowed to harvest it. So either it was intentionally planted in the sixth year, or it just fell from seeds now. So you shouldn't harvest this. So what do you mean you can't harvest it? The Torah says that the produce of the seventh year is for you to eat. So what do you mean you can't harvest it? If you can't harvest it, how do you eat it? So the answer is that the only thing that's prohibited in Shemitah is harvesting in the manner of the rest of the years. We have to act as if, you know, it's ownerless and we're just taking little bits. You can't prepare. As we'll explain in the next mitzvah. So in other words, if you go in the field and you harvest and you prepare bundles of produce in the fields and you're doing like in regular years, that's one thing. But if you just take, you know, a grape or a few grapes to eat, so then that's okay. The whole point of the Shemitah year is that people should act as if it's not, you know, they don't own the land now. That it's ownerless, it's not mine. They should acknowledge the fact that it's all God's, really, and not your own. So you don't, at least once every 7 years, you don't display ownership over it. As we explained above, you're supposed to get the message that you don't really own the land; it all belongs to God. I say dalad. Medina hamitzvah, Masha Amr Zichron Levracha. What are the halachos? Shafil Avar Adam Benata Sadeo B'Shuyas V'Tzamcha. That on a deraisa level, according to the Sefer Chinuch, not everybody agrees with this, but according to the Sefer Chinuch, that even if you planted your field during Shemitah, you would still be allowed to eat it. Perusem mutarim bachila midaraisa. Not midarabana, but midaraisa. Uvilvad shelo yiktzor kederech hakotzrim b'chol sharshonim shekotzrim kol hasadeh u'ma'amidin kriv adoshim abakar. You know, in the other years you bring in animals and you thresh the stuff and you harvest the whole field at once. No. El adinu midaraisa liktzor me'at mad v'lachvod v'lechol. You take, one grain stalk. You whack it to get the grains out, and then you eat it. You don't harvest it on a large scale and with machinery or with right. It doesn't say machinery obviously, but with animals
equipment.
and equipment, right? And you make piles of grain. This is all not good. So that's the din daraisa. That all things that grow by themselves in the Shemitah year are prohibited to eat. Why? We're not, shlichim means, like plants that you harvest, the whole plant. Like vegetables, like beans, things like that.
What about blackberries?
No, blackberries are fruits, they're trees.
Oh.
In other words, you don't plant the tree every year and harvest it. The tree just produces fruit of its own accord, right? So why did Chazal say if you're not allowed to eat, for example, vegetables that grew during the Shemitah year? Mipnei ovre avera sheyizru ginosam bastav. The different girsos, either that they plant their fields in the winter or they plant their fields besaser, you know, with under the cover of darkness, nobody will see them violating Shemitah. V'yomru svichinhein. They say, look at all these cucumbers that just happened to grow from leftover seeds from last year's harvest. Wow, isn't that amazing?
What are you supposed to eat?
Fruits and stuff from Shishis. That's what it says in the Torah, that if you observe Shemitah properly, then the year before Shemitah is going to give you enough grain for 3 years. Okay, but again, this is also part of the Heter Mechira business, because the in a field that's owned by a non-Jew, so there's no such gzera, right? Because non-Jews are allowed to plant on... first of all, if it's really owned by a non-Jew, but so it doesn't apply, because a non-Jew is allowed to plant his field on Shemitah. It's not recommended regarding the Shemitah,
but
so therefore...
Can, you
this.
You could eat vegetables that grew in Eretz Yisrael in a goyish field, but according to many opinions, they would have kedusha shvius. That's where you get into the sticky problem again. So that's one usage of the Het Mechira, is in order to have vegetables. But if all the farmers in Eretz Yisrael are observing Shemitah properly, then you really do have a problem getting vegetables during the Shemitah year.
Well, not today, you don't.
Well, that can be imported from Chutz Laaretz, yeah.
Yeah.
So it's much more expensive. But nowadays, and of course, like many things, like... chavura matzahs, that are baked slowly and with this, all the chumris and the fancy esrogim and the fruit imported from and the vegetables imported from Chutz Laaretz, it's the people who can't afford it who are buying it. So in Eretz Yisrael you have things that are imported from Chutz Laaretz. And there you have no problem of all the vegetables.
In the day,
yeah.
Before there was
then you really had a problem getting vegetables. Yeah, unless you bought from an Anjou. Yeah. It really was a problem. There are ways, there would be a vegetable that sprouted in some field that's not designed for vegetable production at all, that it's obvious that no one would plant it there, so there are coolers about that. But it's hard. That's why you have, normally if you have Israeli produce showing up in American stores, so you'd much rather it be vegetables than fruit. Because vegetables, you just have to miser it. You have to separate the tithes, and it's for sure kosher. You don't have any problems. But if you have fruits, then you have problems of orla. That if it's grown in the first 3 years of the tree, then it's not kosher at all, and all that you can miser it 70 times, it won't help, that it's going to be it's usher forever. But when it comes right after the Shemitah year, or during the Shemitah year, depending on exactly when the vegetables are harvested, then you have the problem that of Sfichim, that the vegetables grew in Eretz Yisrael, and they could be also because of the problem of Sfichim, so you'd rather it be fruits. Okay? Of course, not really, because the fruits could be Aser Midaraisa, and this is only Aser Midarabanan, but okay. And the fruits, at least there's a Suffolk. And it's not necessarily Vade Orla, but so you just try to buy, when you buy fruits and vegetables in Eretz Yisrael, you have to buy with a hechsher, you have to buy vegetables only in a year that there is no Shemitah problem, so it's just right now. Go buy all the Israeli peppers and vegetables that you want. It applies only in Eretz Yisrael. Again, it only applies in the time where all the Jewish people live there, in a time where the Yovel is applicable. So there are places close to Eretz Yisrael, like what we call Surya. So in Surya, which is the part right just above the northern border of Eretz Yisrael, so that has a status of Eretz Yisrael Midrabanan regarding many things, including Shemitah.
Like Lebanon.
Parts of Lebanon. So if fruit... But there, everybody agrees that if the non-Jew owns the land, then Shemitah does not apply at all. It's only if a Jew owns the land in Syria that Shemitah would apply, Midrabanan, but not the Isser of Svichim. So there you go. You can get vegetables imported from southern Lebanon, and then you can, even if there's Shemitah there and the Jew owns land... Then even in the olden days, I'm saying that's what nowadays they import carrots from who knows Holland, in Eretz Yisrael during Shemitah. So that obviously was not possible 1,000 years ago. So, but they could have imported carrots or whatever vegetables they wanted from the close areas where the Gzera of Sfichim did not apply. Okay, that's why I have these stories that Rosh Hashiva told a story that someone was going to Eretz Yisrael, so a student of the Briskerov said, here, take the Briskerov when you're going to Eretz Yisrael, so take him some fruits and vegetables because he hasn't been eating much during the year. Okay? The overall Zeb is Manhabayis. And if you violate this in the times of the Beis Hamikdash, again, not specifically the Beis Hamikdash, but the time where most of the Jewish, where all the Jewish people really live properly in Eretz Yisrael, each shevet, each tribe lives in its own land. Mm-hmm. And you harvested your field completely like normal. So you harvested the whole field, you threshed with cattle, etc. Then you receive the penalty of lashes. And if you harvest the sfichem, the vegetables and grains and things that where you harvest the whole plant as opposed to fruits that grow on a tree, then you receive the rabbinic penalty of lashes because you're not allowed to eat those at all. Shechacham gazra aleihem kamo shemarnu. The sages pronounced a decree that one is not allowed to consume them, as we said. There is a problem importing things from Chutz Laaretz in the Shemitah year. You have to have a good hashkacha that, you know, sometimes there have been stories where, you know, Arab truck drivers, you know, would go to the rabbis and say, you know, I really don't understand your rules. You want me to take the vegetables from a farm in Israel, drive it just over the border to Jordan, and then drive it back. I don't understand. How does that help? The truth is, it doesn't help. But they want to. The people are trying to cheat. They're trying to give the impression that the produce came from Jordan,
oh,
as opposed to coming from Eretz Yisrael. There have been a lot of scandals like this. So you have to make sure that they have a proper hashgacha over the fruits and vegetables. Although a lot of times it's dangerous if you have a mashkiach with the zebra coat from the Haredes and a long beard and payas going to the Arab, you know, field somewhere in the, you know, deep in the West Bank to just watch that they're really the putting it on the truck and the truck's going straight to the market in Yerushalayim. So that could be very dangerous. So you have to make sure that the halacha and the danger are both observed properly.